Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Thanks for tuning in. I've got a fantastic podcast show today for you with Mike Tobin, OBE. He's a technology entrepreneur and he shares some fantastic secrets here in this episode.
Mike received the Order of the British Empire with recognition from Her Majesty the Queen for his contribution to the UK digital economy. In his business life, Mike was CEO of Telecity. This was a company he helped successfully from a market cap of 6 million to well over 3 billion. Growing the company was quite a journey with several acquisitions along the way. And in the other episode that I did with Mike, he tells me about his personal brand and how it helped him along the way and how it's more longer lived than a business brand. And in fact, what's really interesting is this episode we recorded in a very, very noisy place. So you have to bear with me on the sound. I tried my best to make it work. So hope you enjoy it. And don't forget to review and share on iTunes and wherever else you listen. Really appreciate it. And do subscribe wherever you are. Please subscribe wherever suits you.
Hey there, Mike. It's great to have you with me on a podcast again. And today we are at the
Arts Club.
The Arts Club.
In Dover Street.
In the smoking room, but I don't smoke.
It's just... Nor do I. It's just nice and quiet here. So. Well, relatively so.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk a bit about sales and success secrets to help you scale up your startup.
Okay.
And I've got a few questions. So first one is, how do people stay focused on that one idea that is going to get their business rolling?
Yeah, I think this kind of goes down to the concept of appreciating that failure is actually a step on the way to success. And that's where the focus comes in. And a lovely chap who basically taught me how to sell when I was in my very early 20s. It was actually Bryan Adams' cousin, the singer. His name's Ian. But he sort of explained this to me, and a great lesson for everyone. So if you imagine you're a broom salesperson, right? And you can go back in your statistics and work out that, you know, out of every 100 houses, 95 houses already have a broom. Three of the houses want a broom, but yours is too expensive. And two of them, you know, would really like those, but actually yours is the wrong color. But one of them says, you know what, that's fantastic, it's exactly what I want, and you get it. Now that means statistically, you know in advance that you're gonna sell one broom every 100 houses. So when you knock on a house door and they slam the door in front of you, you should be rejoicing because you're one step closer to your sale, right? Now, if you can apply that principle to the inevitable ups and downs of a startup business, then you know you're going to get those. It's unnatural to assume everything's going to go swimmingly every day. That is just nonsense. So actually, everything that you fail at, call it lessons, right? So you say, I'm going to succeed or I'm going to learn. And you remove that failure element from your view, then actually you can see a direct path to success through all the things that you would have normally said were failures. And that's a really important point for anyone starting anything, and basically for life too.
Yeah, that resonated with the audience. The last time you talked about that, when we spoke, so many people said, because I know a lot of people that are involved with startups, quite a lot of my audience, the more engaged people seem to be those people. And they absolutely loved it. But
funny thing in life, right? There aren't that many lessons to learn, right? It's like communicate well, engage with people. Anybody doing anything in terms of a business startup or selling anything, all they're doing actually is selling themselves. They're selling confidence, right? They're engaging with people and building a trust. If you think about who's going to win and who's going to lose in the future, and I was talking to my 17-year-old daughter yesterday about this. She was saying, look, you know, I'd like to be an artist. I said, well, you know, that's cool, but you're incredibly bright. I mean, you know, but if you want to do art, that's fine. You know, they're very intelligent artists as well. And she says, and I said, well, let me just give you one piece of advice. Focus on your skill set and not the career. Right? So if you focus on being an artist, you're very narrow. Mm-hmm. Right? If you focus on being artistic, right, you could be a curator. Yeah. right? You could be an interior designer. You could be many things, right? Which broadens your entire portfolio of opportunity, but uses the, exactly the same skill set. So instead of thinking about a specific career, think about a specific skill set. You open up the opportunity portfolio, and I think this is again when you're looking at business in development, you probably want to think about what do you have to do there. You have to engage with people. You've got to sell confidence, right? People will buy you, and then they'll buy whatever you are telling them to buy because they trust you. And by the way, it breaks as quickly as it's made, or much quicker than it's made, right? Because you try and sell someone they don't actually need, then that will come off the wrong way as well. So, this is about engaging with people and making sure that they have confidence in you. You're almost being a curator. People go to Amazon, right? Because, and they look at that and they say, people like you, or people that bought the same things as you, have also bought this, right? And we look at that and we go, because we're desperately searching for curation. Searching for creation.
Yeah, that's massive. It's absolutely massive. The use of data with that. It's crazy. We'll have a little chat about that in a minute about data. But so a lot of people that I speak to, certainly in startup business, and also people who aren't used to technology, kind of more the old school generation, even sort of people in their early 40s, mid 30s, they get distracted massively. So how do they stay focused on that one idea that is, or one task that is going to just get them to the next level?
The funny thing is these days that the rate of change is getting faster, right? So maybe having the single objective is not necessarily the most important thing. Maybe the focus should be on drive and energy, and just say that every day, you wake up and you say, what am I going to do today that moves me forward, right?
Yeah.
And that the direction might change, right? But as long as every day you get up with that objective, then you're going to improve. And I think, again, it's a little bit like I was saying, rather than focusing on the end result of being an artist, focus on the talents that you need to have. So in the most important talents you need to build a business, right? Yeah. Tenacity.
Yeah.
Never give up. Yeah. Resilience, stamina, take the knocks.
Yeah. Yeah,
all those things, right? But engage with people. And the other thing about it is little tricks like, people always say it's really hard to get funding for small businesses. Mm-hmm. That's not the case, right? But there's this tiny little key cutters down by Cannon Street tube station in London.
Yeah.
And I always go past, when I walk past in the sunshine, right, I see it as a key cutter. When I walk past in the rain, all these umbrellas are wheeled out into the street.
Oh,
right?
Nice.
Now, they're always inside, but when it's raining, of course, they sell them outside. And one thing I noticed, right, was that when they wheel them outside, these £1.50 throwaway umbrellas are now £10, right? Because it's a supply and demand thing.
Of course.
But of course, banks are just like this. Banks are umbrella salespeople, right? So if you go to a bank wanting money when you need money, they're naturally going to be a little bit more, let's say, rigorous and more sort of suspicious in the way that they engage with you.
Yeah.
But if you go to a bank before you need money,
right,
and you say, hey, look, guys, I'm just going to tell you what I do, and they'll say, what do you want? You say, nothing. I don't want anything. Thanks very much. I'm going to tell you what I do, and I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. And then in 6 months, I'm going to come back and tell you how I did. And if you do this again and again, after two or three visits, the bank goes, how can I help you? Right? And suddenly, the shoe's on the other foot. Right? Now we're talking, because now the bank wants to engage with you. Suddenly, you've knocked 200 basis points off your finance package. Okay? And so you're now going and buying the umbrella when it's sunny.
Right? It's supply and demand.
But you're engaging, you're committing that trust thing in the sunshine, and you're effectively, you're buying your umbrella, but you're saying, you leave it for now and I'll come and pick it up when it rains. Okay?
That makes a lot of sense, for sure. It's a bit like girls, right? before I found a girlfriend, it's like if you look at them, you kind of got to just sort of look away and wait for them to come to you, right?
Well, I mean, there's always the flattery element as well, but Well, I must admit, I was talking to a couple of my good friends at Blipper the other day, and obviously they have some very highly developed facial recognition technology, which is linked into Wikipedia and all these sorts of things. But ultimately, their objective is to put on a contact lens, essentially artificial intelligence, augmented reality, if you like.
On a contact lens.
On a contact lens. So, so basically, you could go into a club and you'd look at a guy or a girl that you were attracted to, and immediately beside them you'd be able to see whether they were single or what their favorite things are, and you know, it's saying, and by the way, she likes green eyes and I've just turned your eyes green. So, you know, that's the sort of thing that you could do, and I'm sure that there'll be defense mechanisms on the other side for that as well, but you know, that's the way technology is going.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that some people would go, that's awful, how terrible would that be for a technology to be able to do that? But and as we were just saying before we were online, I think the problem is that you can't uninvent technology.
No.
So if it's out there, people are going to use it. And you know, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah, it's it could be quite a big problem, I think, for some people. But it's like back to Google, like before people even have a meeting with you, they Google you, right?
Yep.
And like it goes for dating as well. Like Garrett, my business partner in Profile Jetpack, he's always talking about dating, like how, you know, girls, they'll just Google you before they go out on a date with you.
Well, I just saw a statistic a few weeks ago that said that I think 40% of all marriages in the US now derive from online dating.
Wow.
40%.
Wow. It's all a bit of a time suck, really. Like, I mean, I went on Tinder. Like, when after I left my wife, I went on Tinder, and it just took up so much time. It was just. But there was. I was reading something the other day about this girl. And she'd hacked Tinder. She came up with this fantastic idea. So she basically liked every guy that popped up in her feed, and she had adapted her picture to say "catch of the day" on it, and she. She did really well with it. But, yeah.
That's funny. Well, in the 5 minutes we've been going so far, there's probably been about 2.5 million swipes on Tinder. So that's how many go on every single day. So.
Yeah, yeah. So you're a big believer, I know, in taking action without strategy. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, that's probably putting me in a really tough spot. But So from my book, Forget Strategy, Get Results. I guess you're deriving that.
Yeah.
And so it's slightly tongue in cheek, because what I'm kind of portraying in that is that strategy is less important than taking action per se. And you can write, I mean, back in the day, if you go back 10, 15 years, we used to write 5-year business plans.
Right.
Now, nobody writes a 5-year business plan and has any expectation that it's going to go beyond a year.
Oh, right.
Right?
Okay.
Because basically things change so fast around us, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Uber becomes a verb, you know, to Uber something, you know, and you know, you're kind of saying that even Uber's going to be Ubered, you know, and you sort of go to a different level. And writing the strategy is not as important as actioning. And we spoke earlier on about the fact that Microsoft have already announced that there's going to be no more new versions of software.
Yeah.
They're only going to update, right? So actually getting something out there, imperfect as it may be, and then tweaking it constantly is the right way forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
So rather than a strategy, I would use the word vision. I would say, there's my vision. My vision is, I want to be famous for this.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And everything I do every day, from the moment I wake up, you know, in a business sense, is that to focus on delivering my vision.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but it's going to happen.
Okay.
Now, if you think about going on holiday, you know, if you've got your holiday booked, you probably know which resort you're going to, which country it is, right? But you probably don't know what color the BA flight or what color the plane is going to be, and you probably you don't know what color the taxi is going to be when you take the taxi to the airport, and you probably don't know what route he's going to take. You might have a reasonable idea, but you won't know what route it is. And by the way, if there's a roadblock on the road, it doesn't mean to say your holiday is finished. He'll just take a detour and you'll get there in time, and you'll plan a few extra minutes early just in case that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things that are the unpredictable bits, which you cannot write in a strategy document,
right?
But the vision is, I'm going on holiday.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So by hook or by crook, I'm going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really mind if I get Ubered on the way.
Okay.
Right? Because I'll find a way through it. That's the kind of attitude. It's not prescriptive, this is how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's more, this is what we're going to do, and we'll work the way of getting it done on the way.
So it's really like a continual innovation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
most ideas,
absolutely.
Most things are invented already. Right? I mean, you can shoot me down for that. You can shoot me with that if you want. But most things are invented already. To invent something, don't worry, I'm fine. To invent something right now is really hard.
Well,
so
you can innovate, and I'm not 100% sure what the difference between innovate and invent is, but I kind of see what you mean. So the way I see the answer to that particular comment is that it's a bit like the big data thing, right?
Yeah.
People see big data, people see data. Yeah. As really valuable, and they want to own it, and they want to keep it secure, and it's my data, and it's so valuable.
Yeah.
Well, I disagree with this, right? Okay. I think the true value of data is when it's released into the open, and that you can access data ubiquitously. Because if you look at Uber, I can mention the name again. That is an Internet of Things play, right? Which owns a bunch of users, and it has this device that follows a car, tracking it around.
Okay.
But the value of having that information in a vertical is nothing compared to having it on a horizontal. Mm-hmm. Because if you then could access the CCTV cameras in London, and you could access the weather conditions, then you could actually sell it to an insurance company. Could package up an insurance claim with footage, with your driving style, with driving conditions before you've even claimed.
Right?
And that's true value. And that's ubiquitous access, no ownership. But the innovation, the invention, if you like, comes from how you bring it all together. So it's not one idea. It's the amalgamation of many ideas to make a new idea.
Yeah, I'm grinning away here. Because, big data with weather data, it's massive. I was just talking about it this morning and how, like, for example, say you're an ice cream manufacturer and you can actually input the weather data into your sales figures, into your supply chain, and you can say, well, we think, based upon our advertising campaigns, that we're going to grow X amount per year, and then you can actually add a whole new level of weather data on top.
Absolutely.
Right? It's just so exciting. Because
absolutely.
And also the reduction in wastage, right? Because you were talking about that earlier. Well, I know it's a bit of a diversion, right? I've got some questions, but you know, that I wrote down. But actually, I found what you were saying about by 2020, there's going to be a reduction in costs in
F&B, food and beverage industry, by 15%.
Which is just massive.
Which on their margins are immense. You know, just immense savings.
And also, that's gonna help people who are hungry, right?
Yeah, of course.
We hope.
Well, absolutely. You know, these are things that you've got devices on the release of water and chemicals into the soil, which is almost meter by meter.
Yeah.
You know, with the sensors in the soil knowing exactly what nutrients to go in every meter of a field rather than just spraying the entire thing with random amount.
Totally.
Yeah, so these are the things that can happen, and the tuning, the fine tuning, right? You know, and the vision is I want an optimal crop, right? And the plan is, well, I don't know which meter is going to be needing what.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to build a plan for that.
Exactly.
But I'm going to finely tune each, you know, like a... What is really cool, someone explained this to me in a better way, and they said, you know, large ships are really difficult to turn.
Mm-hmm.
And so the size of the rudder is enormous, and to turn a ship like that is enormous. So what they do is on the end of the rudder, they have mini rudders.
Hmm. Okay.
And they're easy to turn because they're little. But by turning that little rudder, it helps drag the big rudder around.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So you're doing micro changes all the time, and you're guiding the overall picture of the ship, right? So
You
know, this is kind of how we use big data, or how we use the Internet of Things and big data.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting few years with all the security issues that are around that, and actually, you know, it's going to be crazy. I mean, certain wine location, you know, wine. Regions in the world, they don't allow extra water.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Absolutely.
So actually, the ones that actually do allow extra water are gonna come up with the most amazing quality wines. It's gonna be really interesting to gauge that, and also the the vitamins and the nutrients that these plants need. It's just going to be, it's quite exciting time, really.
Well, think about if we had, you know, obviously people like enjoy their alcohol, and if you could put nutrients into alcohol, which nobody's really thought about yet, but they've tried to put things into bread.
Yeah.
But they haven't put it into alcohol yet, and that might actually be a better thing. So.
Well, I don't know. I think with the way alcohol affects absorbing the nutrients.
Yes, of course.
I had something interesting about that. Ah, it doesn't matter. It might come to me later. But I think it's a very, very interesting time right now, for sure. And so how do you think big data affects scaling a startup business? Do you think they can use it, or is it too expensive?
Some businesses actually, you know, use big data as their core product, right? So again, you know, my position is that it's not about a vertical application.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow we need, and I think this is where government is really important, because government has a tremendous amount of data on us.
Right.
And I think that I just got a few people arriving here, so it's kind of nice. Government has a really tremendous amount of data on us, and obviously it would be tremendously useful if we could release that data into the atmosphere, if you like, and have everyone use that kind of thing. But I don't think that's going to happen in the near future. But somehow, companies, I think, first of all, need to think about what do they want to be famous for, right? And then try and identify areas in which they can gather large volumes of data on a horizontal basis, not a vertical basis.
To some people what horizontal and vertical is?
So, you know, if you've got a vertical application, you're focused on the data within that bit of the business, right? You know,
that
industry,
niche,
Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, the amount of enriching you could do to your portfolio product by combining other vertical information on a horizontal basis, so you're taking a bit of all this other big data as well. And I think most businesses could benefit from, you know, I mean, the simplest stuff in big data, you know, people think about big data as like it's a tremendous amount of data, but you can start with a CRM system,
right,
and you can say, I'm going to put all my clients, every single time I touch a customer or a prospect, I'm putting it in a CRM system. And if you did this absolutely religiously, you would build a tremendous big data, you know, sort of platform, right? Now, the problem is, you know, it's usually salespeople that use CRM, and with respect, and I am a sales background, you know, we never use CRM systems because we think they're a pain in the neck to use. And so I think one of the issues is getting people to understand the value of things like CRM systems, because they're only a system, right? They don't produce the data. You've got to put the data in.
Mm-hmm.
Big data is, it doesn't, it's not there. You've got to produce the data, and then you can analyze it.
Mm-hmm.
And producing data on clients relies on people to do the work around the engagement, right? So that you can enrich an understanding. And then you can use a technology to cut and splice people in the right way. So then if you've got an offer, then you know that, you know, let's say someone gets a couple of free tickets to Chelsea, and then they know how many of their potential customers or potential prospects are Chelsea supporters, then they can go in and look at a database rather than having to think, now which of my guys would I have to invite? Oh gosh, I can't remember. One button could identify that in 1 second. Right?
So it's very true.
It's a very simple kind of, you know, put the data into a system and you can cut and slice it and splice it as much as you want. So people buy data, and they buy really sometimes very generic lists of nonsense, which is why we always get we always get these random calls from, like, you know, did you have an accident? Well, your name's on a list somewhere and they've sold it, right? And so some of this, and this is where I think our wariness comes in as well. You know, we don't like people having data on us because people abuse the fact that they own it. But we've got to get over that. Because unfortunately we're way beyond that. No one's going to uninvent, right? So, you know, we're not going to have one of those men in black pens and make everyone forget all our data. It's out there. It's in the ether. So we've got to get used to it. And we've got to say, well, okay, if I have nothing to hide, I'm going to build a protection in that stops people phoning me. I'll block callers. I'll do all those things. And people eventually take you off the list because it's wasting their time.
Yep.
So, you know, it's like speed cameras, right? You know, then they sell the speed camera detector, and then the police bring out a new version of speed camera, and then you got to buy a new speed camera detector. And, you know, it's just going to be a never-ending kind of, you know, augment and defend type thing.
Yeah, about speeding.
Oh, you've got none.
Well, I used to ride a lot of motorcycles, and I still have a dream about having a bike and just taking my number plate off. I have this dream, but not a wise idea.
Well, I couldn't countenance that then.
I probably will never do it.
Well, but if you took your helmet off as well, they'll get you with facial recognition.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have to have two different helmets. One for when I go crazy. Have a bat cave.
Yeah.
Because you've got to get away from the copter, right? There were these guys a few years ago, and they would race around the M25 at 4 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning, and they would ride in. They'd do like 185, 190 on their bikes, and they'd race into Heathrow and park in the car park.
Oh, really?
Because they figured out the police copter could not go in to the airport.
Of course, because it couldn't fly over.
Yeah, they had great
That's
fun.
That's very funny.
Great fun.
Well, there was the old hour club, wasn't there? There was a race at sort of 3 in the morning with all these sports cars around the M25. It's 120 miles.
Oh, God.
So if you can do it in an hour, you belong to the club, right? So.
Classic.
Yeah.
Back in the day. What's that? Back in the day. I remember my friend Clive, he used to go to the fish and chip shop, and this is when the police had a Ford Cortina, I think, and he would go to the fish and chip shop, and he'd put his jacket over his number plate on his Norton Commando, and then they would drive past, because he was hiding his number plate from them. They'd drive past, and he knew exactly where they were every few days,
right.
And they'd race with them up the road for ages. They'd chase him, you know, and never caught him.
That's
funny. They were just bored in those days.
Yeah.
But I don't know, things change, right? So, do you think it's important to create a clearly defined target market, or can this evolve as you start your business? Can you go wide and then decide? I mean, how?
Well, I think almost. So I think, you know, when people start their businesses, they see a need. Or they identify a need, and they go, oh, you know, so there's essentially a niche specifically, and that's fine. But sometimes what you do is, you know, you really have the luxury of testing a market for a very long period of time without income, you know, as a startup business. So what you're looking for is the ability to start generating something more than just mild interest. Quickly enough that you can then satisfy the banks that there's a proposition or satisfy investors or even just get some modest income to keep you going. So I think what happens a lot is that people veer from the original objective because they need to get some income. Now the danger there is that sometimes that becomes the driver.
Then it
may be a very kind of nondescript kind of service that everyone else is doing, but you just happen to have some friends and family that want it from you.
Yes.
And you lose sight of the original plan. So that's one option. But the other thing is, if you do track something, what you very often find is it's not necessarily exactly how you perceived it should be. So, you know, you thought this was a need, but it might have been a need for you, and you are in a small community. However, the idea is interesting enough with a little tweak here and there that you can open up the audience. So again, remember the difference between being an artist and having artistic talents. Okay, so if you're very focused on one particular thing, you are, you know, if you're the best in the world and you still might make an awful lot of money.
Yeah.
But if you can focus on your particular skill sets, and by the way, when we start businesses, we have skills, but we have passion. And what you're passionate about sometimes can hide a multitude of sins when it comes to skill sets, right? Because you can be passionate about something and your diligence and your drive and your tenacity overcomes some modest lack of skill in a certain area, or lack of experience or lack of knowledge. So you know, once, as long as you've got that, then what you're doing is you're broadening your optionality, because you're not focusing in on the niche, you know, you're focusing in on your skill set and your passion. So I would say it all starts from an idea. It starts from people perceiving a need, but I think you need to be very flexible from that point on. And understand that you need to morph with the times.
Okay, Okay.
Again, as we said at the beginning, the simple fundamentals of business still are the same. You've got to engage, you've got to communicate, you've got to make people like you, you've got to curate ideas into them.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is as old as time.
Yeah.
We're just using different tools.
Yeah. It's quite exciting, I must say.
That's great. So every day is fun.
Yeah. It's just so much fun being able to meet people online and then meet them face to face, or meet them face to face and then deepen the relationships online. I met you like on LinkedIn. Like now we're sitting here because I had to come into London. It's just like it is a bizarre place, really.
Yeah.
If you went back 50 years or 100 years and you explained this world to people, it would just be, you know, insane.
Well, everything that we now see as technology, we used to think as magic.
Yes.
Right, and you know, the fact that we now can control our electronic limbs with our thoughts, you know, that was called telepathy in the old days, right? I work with this business that I'm chairman of in Bristol, which is Ultra Haptics, and it creates a sensation of touch through ultrasound.
And
actually, one of the things it does is it can put a large sort of platform of this on the ground with a certain volume of the sound. You can lift dust in the air. Right.
Wow.
Now, the idea for that is, in, let's say, in a silicon plant, right?
Yeah.
Making a silicon wafer.
Yeah.
You'd want to super clean it every night. You could actually levitate the dust and suck it out. And obviously, it's only dust at the moment, but we have invented levitation, right? So, you know, essentially, you know,
that's
it's only a question
point.
Now of the pressure to lift the person and you're off, right? So
now
we can fly.
I think they've almost, they did launch a flying hovercraft thing, didn't they?
Air pressure. But this is something that doesn't even use air or anything. It's just sound that we can't hear.
Sound.
Yeah,
wow.
But we can't hear.
Wow.
It's very interesting.
Could certainly do with that. Some of these hostels I stayed at when I went around the world 20 years ago.
And it's sound of a different nature, though.
Classic. So, why are you a maverick? I know you say you're a maverick, and other people say you're a maverick, and I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
Well, I think it was a term sort of coined by a couple of journalists when they were doing articles on me, and I guess for many reasons, actually, a bit crazy, but I think the first time it was used was because I was back in about sort of 2004. I was merging two data center companies together, Telecity and Redbus.
Okay.
And when I talked to my management team about the merger, their natural reaction was, you know, mergers mean synergies, mean job cuts, mean, you know, two people each job. You know, are we at risk? And I said, look, you know, whether we are or not, and by the way, I was very loyal to them. None of them actually, it was an incremental management team rather than a replacement. So, but I said, look, you know, whether that's true or not, you can't fear things. So fear is a completely irrational emotion.
Okay.
It's like worry, you know.
Yeah.
Worrying about something is like paying interest on a debt you haven't drawn yet.
Right.
It's,
that's a good way to
it's nonsense, right? So
yeah.
So basically you have a couple of things. You either if you are concerned about a potential outcome, you have a couple of options. Either there's something you can do to minimize that impact, in which case you should do it.
Yeah.
Right? Or there's nothing you can do to minimize the impact, in which case why worry about it? Right?
Yeah.
But there isn't a point where there's something you could do and you sit and worry about it. Okay, that's not the acceptable option. So the idea is, look, you're sitting here fearing the future, which is invariably less painful than you are perceiving it to be.
Right.
But you're already losing all this emotion, stress and everything else, and nothing's happened yet.
Yeah.
We don't fear the current and we don't fear the past. We fear what's going to happen, what could happen, actually. And rarely does. So I said, look, I took my management team up to a management meeting up in Scotland, and they thought they were going for a whiskey tasting. But as we crossed the Firth of Forth on the north side of the bridge, and we did a quick U-turn, and down there is a massive man-made aquarium right inside the Firth of Forth.
Okay.
And it's really big and very, very high. And when you're in it, you feel like you're in open waters.
Okay.
So we pulled up in the car park, and I said, can you get out? And this is a strange place to have a whiskey tasting. But anyway,
right.
And I said, look, can you start getting into your wetsuits, please? And they were looking at me going like, what's this idiot on now? So two by two, they got into their wetsuits. And then I said, please get into the water. And as they got in, they started to see these shark fins floating around on the surface.
Right? How big were these sharks?
3 meters. Yeah, and probably a meter across. These are serious, serious sharks, like really serious sharks.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, so two by two, they went down to the seabed and had these sharks, literally, there was no cage, no nets, coming right up to them. The only thing we said is, please don't try and touch them because they will have your hand off.
But, really?
Yeah, but if you stand very still like that, they come
They're right up to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can't pet a shark.
Are these great whites?
They weren't great whites, but there was hammerheads, there was tiger sharks, there was also all different things in there. So these things were coming right up within 6-8 inches of your face.
Whoa.
And they're you know, like a meter wide.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when they came out again, two by two, we had a debrief, and I said, okay, so how did you feel when you realized what was going to happen? So you got these, you thought it was kind of weird getting in the tank, and then you saw all these shark fins floating around. They said, oh my God, you couldn't imagine the fear I had. You couldn't imagine the, like, I was petrified. I hated you, Mike. where's my HR manager? You know, where's my HR department? You know, and by the way, the HR person went in as well. So, so I said, okay, well, how did you feel? So total terror, basically. How did you feel when you were on the seabed and they were coming up to you and kind of staring at you and like motionless, and but you were there? And they said, well, I was still really scared, but it was kind of exciting as
Yeah.
It was like a buzz.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, okay, how do you feel now when you're out? They said, oh, amazing. Life-changing experience. I don't want to do it again.
No way.
But life-changing. I'm so happy I've done it and survived, right?
Wow.
So I said, okay, well, every time you fear something, right, going into it, you have this great fear. Well, know this. It's almost certainly you're going to learn something out of it.
Yeah.
It's almost certainly not going to be as bad as you're fearing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come out of it, you're going to feel so much more enhanced, right, and better, happier, and everything else. So obviously the ones I didn't want to carry on in the merge company, I gave them a little nick on the arm as we went in, and that sorted them out. But
Sorry.
I'm kidding. It was a joke. this was a way of demonstrating to them in real terms. I could tell them till I was blue in the face, don't be afraid, and they go yeah. But if you go to these extremes and you drag people's emotion out, then they have to learn it. Because, you know, and so that was the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
The first time. So, well, when we did merge the businesses, so then I took them. So naturally, these two businesses were kind of head-to-head competitors for years, right?
Yeah.
And now they're on the same management team.
Okay.
So most of them were getting along, but there were a couple of that still just couldn't get beyond their kind of resistance level of working together.
Yeah.
So hated enemies for that long, and you know, it's like
of course,
combining Chelsea and Arsenal into one
team.
You know, so and so anyway, I took them to the North Pole,
right.
and we went to a place called the Ice Hotel.
Okay.
And the Ice Hotel is built every year in the North Pole, and made out of ice. And, and it's, you know, the rooms are igloos, and the beds are made of ice, the plates are made of ice, the table's made of ice.
So, I've seen this.
Okay, so we've had it's amazing. If you ever get a chance to go there, it's fantastic.
I want to go there. It's
so it's just like the ice bar in Heddon Street, by Regent Street.
Okay.
If you go there, it's below like the below zero bar or something.
Yeah,
it's called.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Except that instead of -5, it's -50. But other than that, it's the same.
Yeah.
So anyway, you go there, and obviously we had plenty to drink. I took them to the bar and lots of drinks. And when they were well lubricated, then I said, look, well, now I'm going to explain the sleeping arrangements. And one of the problems with -50 is you have to sleep 2 per bed for body warmth.
Okay.
So the ones that didn't get on well, I made them sleep together.
No!
and they were the best of friends in the morning, of course. The interesting thing there was, you know, the reason they were the best of friends is the one thing you can't have in an ice hotel is an ice toilet, for obvious reasons, because it would melt. So you have to go outside to go to the bathroom, go to the toilet.
Yeah.
And of course, having had good amounts of vodka in advance, they find themselves needing the loo in the middle of the night. So you had to wake, and you can't go out on your own.
No,
if you slip, if you slip on the ice and knock yourself out, you're dead in 20 minutes, right? You're gone. So you have to have someone watching you. So of course you wake up this guy that you hate, right? And say, excuse me, can you come and shine your torch while I go to the loo outside, please? And he's shining his torch on you, having a pee, right?
Yeah.
And then you have to go back in, and you can warm your feet on his bum inside. Yeah. Right? But this is, you know, and so this was creating the bond, right?
Yeah,
and really, there's no way that they could be enemies and argue after that. So, you know, this alternative style was...
You are a maverick.
Right. And a few other things. Some of my rather crazy, charitable escapades as well has probably endorsed that
idea.
I
like your CEO sleep out. I think that's really cool.
Absolutely. That's something I started about 4 years ago.
What date is that?
So that's usually in early March every year. And it's we sleep just in sleeping bags in front of the London Stock Exchange in Paternoster Square on the floor.
Yeah.
On the pavement, and it's CEOs, so we have the CEO of places like Dell, Fujitsu, Barclaycard, and we raise well over 150 grand a year over the last 4 years for Action for Children, for homeless children.
It's really nice, because it keeps your feet on the ground, right? I remember we talked
it keeps
about
everything
this
on the
before.
Ground, I tell you, it's freezing doing that,
and you know, I bet it is.
Well, it's quite interesting, though. The other thing about experiencing, you know, small businesses, and it's an analogy to charities in this case. One of the CEOs the year before last was saying to me in the morning at 5 a.m. and you don't sleep much. You know, you get woken up by foxes the size of large dogs, and you know, you've got the dustbin man, and you've got drunks, and you've got all these people constantly, and you've got some balls binging off every hour, and so all of this, you just don't sleep, and it's cold and it's damp and everything else and rainy, and he said in the morning, oh my goodness, this is amazing, I really do appreciate how bad it is to sleep rough. It's better than just giving money. And I said, well, you kind of do, you've had a taste, but you really don't, because the difference being at 5 o'clock, you knew you were getting up, you were going home, having a nice hot shower, and you're back in your day. Well, these guys don't have an end date. Right, this is every day without end, so it's the hopelessness of it. Right now, an analogy to business, right? You've got to know how hard it is to try and set up a business, to keep kind of running up against obstacles. Yeah, you can give as much advice to people as you like to run a to start a business.
Yeah.
But until you've done it, you just don't realize how difficult it is to get these things going.
It's so hard.
And 99% of successful businesses is down to just getting up one more time than you fall over.
That's it. I can believe that. And just changing, like some days you wake up and your priorities can change just like that.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Garen and I will wake up. I'll wake up. He's in Canada five hours behind.
Yeah.
So I'll wake up. And like he wakes up sometimes 4 o'clock in the morning. So we exchange messages, and he's like, "Right, I'm like, look, you need to do this." And he's like, "No, I don't. I need to do this." And I'm like, "Actually, he's right." You know, so it's funny how you have to just pivot. Right? You've got to immediately change.
This is why the strategy doesn't work. This is why drive whatever's necessary and have the vision still.
I can resonate completely. It's the toughest thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we had the problem is we didn't have any leads. We started getting loads of leads, and then what the hell are you going to do? Your process is a manual.
Yeah.
We launched this thing called brandinggrader.com. So people put their name in, they put a LinkedIn profile and their email.
Yep.
And then you go out and you create a report for them based upon their information. And we will automate it. But to start with, we haven't automated it yet, so we stopped promoting it.
Because
it was literally, we had so many of these. And Garen's like, we got some more leads in there, dude. And I'm like, really? And I open up this spreadsheet and I'm like, oh no. Because I have to
work.
Yeah. So now, so we decided we're going to cut that one off. And actually do the podcasts, because people are loving the podcasts. They're loving them. Especially the last one we did. I hate to say it.
Sorry.
And
giving you more leads again.
Well, it is. Yeah, but at least they're not asking me for a brand review without paying me. So now we've changed the process, and so now we're doing infographics as well. We've started doing some of them. It's about creating content that's really easy to create that gives massive value.
Easy to understand, great for articulation. I get it. So I mean, you know, the annoying part of leads is you have to follow them up.
You've
got
to do something.
You know, it always reminds me of French brasserie waiters. You know, because you go to a brasserie at lunchtime and they look at you in disdain that you're interrupting their lunch, you know. So I'm really sorry to be a customer.
That's a really funny analogy. Yeah, because it's, the thing is that I think I was reading something the other day, like 54% of salespeople do not follow up, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's so strange. It's like, why on earth not?
You know? Yeah, and then they miss the conversion, yeah, which is the best bit. Like, yeah, the rest of it is
that's
just
the
torture.
Buzz. That's the buzz.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's torture. You know, but it's a funny game. It really
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So, about your new book,
yeah,
right? It's called Live, Love, Work, Prosper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know you really tackle this work-life balance that you say does exist or doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist.
So what's
you know, for us, I mean. You know, I think if you're a certain level in a kind of an aspirational case, let's say you're a middle management, you're trying to start your own business, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't exist. You can't have a successful work-life balance.
Okay.
And I know that's controversial, but I think what you need to do is have work and life integrated these days. And I think, you know, if you look at even great leaders, you know, great inspirational people for me, people like Nelson Mandela,
yeah,
fantastic leader, iconic, and yet his home life was a mess, right? He was
yeah,
divorced twice, his kids
yeah,
were fighting over his legacy before he was dead,
yeah,
you know, and his greatest regrets were he didn't spend enough time with the family. Well,
yeah,
you know, he changed an entire nation. He changed an entire continent. He was an inspiration for millions and millions and millions of people.
Yeah.
He couldn't get his home life sorted.
No, but his personal brand was
his personal,
exceptional, wasn't
exactly
it?
And well, this is the thing. Is you see, I think if you are so driven to success,
yeah,
right, you effectively cannot compromise.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and when we look at work-life balance, you sort of say, "Oh, I'm home, love," you know, and it's like, "Ah, oh, okay, I can't do my emails now. I can't do that." That's not the way of the world anymore.
No, no.
Right?
You have to do it.
And if you try to fight it,
yeah,
you will lose at one. Okay, so by integrating, so I'll give you a little example.
Yeah,
I'm on 14 boards around the world.
Yeah.
You know, I'm boards in Hong Kong, New York, South Africa, Moscow, Belgium, everywhere.
Yeah.
So when I go to a restaurant,
yeah,
just as we're sitting here now, the phone's on the table.
Well, you have your phone on the table. I have the same phone, and my phone's on the table
there you
too.
Go. There you go. So so when you go to a restaurant, we were with another couple having a nice dinner out the other night, and the woman said, "Don't you think it's rather rude to have your phone on the table when we're trying to enjoy sort of a
yeah,
we haven't seen each other for ages, you know?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I can see how you would think of that, but let me invite you to think about it a slightly different way,"
mm-hmm,
right? If, bearing in mind that I've got businesses on every time zone, now the chance of me having an issue that needs my attention in that period of time is really small,
yeah,
really small.
Yeah.
Okay? If I have my phone in my briefcase in the cloakroom,
mm-hmm,
a little bit of my brain would be saying, what could be happening
yeah,
to those businesses? Now remember what I said about worry. It's nonsense, right? But I can't do anything about that
yeah,
because it could be ringing itself off the hook
in
my thing, but I wouldn't
yeah,
know.
No.
Now, if it's on the table
mm-hmm,
and it's not ringing and it's not doing anything, I'm 100% engaged on the table.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So this isn't about me checking my emails every 2 minutes.
No.
This is about me using this, not as a ball, this isn't my ball and chain.
No.
Right? This is my liberator.
Right.
Right? This phone is my liberator. It sits there,
yeah,
and there's only certain situations that I need to access it. Right?
Yeah.
And when that hits the fan, everybody on this table would want me to deal with it because it's a very important thing.
Of course,
so
your life will fall
exactly,
to pieces, right?
Exactly. So
yeah,
that, you know, they would absolutely be delighted for me to go and deal with it if it's an emergency. But if you want me engaged, then allow me to be engaged. Allow me to free my mind from the thoughts and worries. Right? I'm using technology as a tool to free my mind from the worries of
yeah,
what could happen.
Well, it is supposed to help our lives, right?
Yes.
Not to be a nightmare. But then there is the other side of the coin, which is the addiction of it, because the user interface is so amazing. I was addicted to my phone a while
yeah,
back. I'm a bit better now. Yeah, but it becomes a sort of very difficult, I think.
Well, I think if you think about this, right, so aspirational middle manager,
mm-hmm,
let's for argument's sake say it's a guy, it can be a woman,
yep,
but rather than saying he, she every time, let's just say a guy at this stage.
Yeah.
But please remember that I'm completely open to the possibilities of the reverse.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, middle manager, he works hard at work. He knows he's got a number of peers that are also after the next job.
Yeah.
Right. And his partner said, look, newborn baby, young couple, aspirational, newborn baby, it's your turn to do bath night tonight, right? Because, you know, I want to watch a movie, I've got a couple of friends around, and it's your turn, put the kid to bed, and blah, blah.
Okay.
Right, fine, okay, I'll get home at a reasonable time, leaves the office, and as he's on the bus home, right, he gets an email from the boss saying, oh, I'm so sorry, I forgot to ask you before you left, but I urgently need this report for tomorrow.
Okay. Right?
I urgently need it. It's got to be done tonight. Can you either come back or can you get it done wherever you are, right?
Yeah.
So he now goes home and he opens up the computer before he goes to bath time,
right? Yeah.
And starts, you know, trying to get this thing done. The pressure's on him now. He's sweating, right?
From
the
pressure. This is going to give him grief.
Well, he's sweating already because his boss,
needs the report.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, his wife comes in. What does she do? Quite rightly, she's frustrated because she's saying, you said, right?
Yeah.
But instead of creating a compromise, she's adding more stress to the situation, right? Now he's doubly stressed. So what does he do? He takes his phone into the toilet, right, and starts doing his emails in the loo. And she says, you're right in there, you're a long time. No, I'm fine, I'm just strange lunch, I think it's a bit dodgy. Now what he's doing there, he's starting to lie to his partner about working from home, right? Do you know what he does the next day? He goes into the office, right? Is at the cooler, right? Having delivered this report by the skin of his teeth, and one of his peers comes along, who may be a woman, and says, oh my God, did you get that last minute request last night? Crazy, wasn't it? Oh yeah, so bad. And now he's starting to engage and endear with a relationship at work while he's lying,
to his
partner,
his wife,
through a totally unnecessary situation, right? So in this particular case, what you could do is you could say, look, instead of going straight onto the computer, you say, listen, love, I really want to do bath time, but look, I've got this request from the boss here. I tell you what, I think I'm going to tell it to go to hell. I've had enough of this.
Yeah.
Right? What do you think we should do? Right? And suddenly she's on the side and she's going,
what,
like,
what do you think we should do?
Exactly. And she now says, oh, well, you know what? We were hoping for that promotion, right? And because we would like to upscale the house, and that extra salary would be really good.
Yeah.
So how long do you think you'll need? Well, I tell you what, could I do a slightly shorter bath time, or just give me an extra 10 minutes now just to get the thing done?
Yeah.
And then, you take your time.
Yeah, then it takes all the stress away.
Completely de-stressed, right?
Yeah.
And that's the difference between trying to find a balance, saying, I'm going to switch off now.
Yeah.
Right? And off goes my phone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And finding a way to integrate. And there are ways to integrate with engaging with people in a different way and non-conflictual. And, you know, this is a business book that might just save your marriage.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really excited to read it because you got some great tech in there as well.
Got some great tech in there. Yeah. So the idea is we're using QR codes. The idea is you can just QR read the various pages on the book, which will come up as little graphics, and then you'll see videos of me, supplementary content that takes you out into the internet. And that's, you know, I don't think there's a book that's actually done this sort of engagement with the internet.
No, not that anyone talks about.
It's very cool.
So you're going to be sharing some kind of experiences of where you're out and about.
So we've got some pretty cool 3D cameras and things that you know, as I'm traveling, I might sort of come up with a quick riff for 30 seconds while I'm sort of, you know, buzzed about something in the book, and then I'll use that as the content. You just have to click your phone onto one of the pages and you're out into Frankfurt, or you're out into Hong Kong, and there you go.
It's going to be good. I'm looking forward to it. For sure. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure.
Really appreciate it, and look forward to reading your book.
Fabulous, and I look forward to listening to the podcast when it comes out.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections.